Satish Kumar lives his life by the principles of nonviolence. He spent years as a Jain monk in India. In 1962, inspired by Gandhi, Kumar undertook a peace walk with a friend to the four corners of the nuclear world. They went on foot, with no money, and stayed with anyone who would shelter them. Today, Kumar edits the eco-magazine Resurgence. His latest book is called The Buddha and the Terrorist. We caught up with Kumar at his earth-friendly home in Devon, England. According to Kumar, the Jain practice of nonviolence goes deep.
Jains practice nonviolence more than I would say any other religion. Most religions talk about nonviolence, but Jains practice it. So, for example, as a monk, I would not bear any shoes in case when I'm walking, my foot is on any insect or any creature, and they might get hurt even with the weight of the shoes. I will not speak without having a little mask on my mouth so that any germs or creatures may be harmed. So to avoid that, I'll wear a mask. And I will not eat at night in case I cannot see some insects or creature might go in the food. I mean, they go to a great length to avoid any harm to any life, not just human life, but any life. That's the kind of great commitment the Jains make.
Why did you leave Jain behind?
I left Jain order as a monk behind, but I still adhere to the Jain principle of nonviolence in my life, because I think our civilization at present is a very violent civilization. And therefore, nonviolence is the most important and most practical, as well as most idealistic principle. And I adhere to it now. And as an ecologist, as an environmentalist, I am not driven by fear of doom and gloom, fear of disaster, fear of global warming and climate change, fear of the end of civilization. I am driven by the principles of nonviolence, love of the earth, love of nature, love of life, love of people, love of all beings. And that is the principle of nonviolence, which is missing from our world. We are driven by fear, and fear is the root of violence.
Is this what was on your mind when you went on your cross-country peace walk?
Exactly, nonviolence was in my mind. And that nonviolence was particularly in my mind in terms of nuclear weapons. Now, what kind of society do we have which ends up in producing and manufacturing and possessing nuclear weapons? Countries which call themselves civilized, are they really civilized? Once Mahatma Gandhi was asked, "Mr. Gandhi, what do you think of Western civilization?" He said, "I think it would be a good idea." Now, that is something that civilized world, so-called civilized world, can create and possess and even use nuclear weapons. So my journey started from the grave of Mahatma Gandhi and took me across 8,000 miles through Pakistan, through Afghanistan, through Iran, the deserts of Iran, but also beautiful oasis of Iran, and then through Azerbaijan and Armenia and Georgia by the Black Sea, and across to Moscow, and then across Europe to Paris. And then, of course, I had to take a boat to cross the Channel, English Channel, from Calais to Dover. And then I walked to London, and then I met Bertrand Russell, who helped me to cross the Atlantic. And I sailed across the Atlantic from Southampton to New York. And then I walked again from New York to Washington, D.C. And I ended at the grave of John F. Kennedy. So from the grave of Mahatma Gandhi to the grave of John F. Kennedy, I walked 8,000 miles in the cause of nonviolence. And I promoted nonviolence in every country, in every language. And I said to people that nonviolence is the most practical and most easy and most simple way to live with each other. If we commit violence, we will never be happy. When you are kind, compassionate, generous, and nonviolent, you will be happy. Nonviolence is the source of happiness. This was my message.
Tell me a little bit, if you will, about the people you met. Did you find that your message was well received? Did you get different Did you get a different sense of who the people are in all of the places that you walked
through? Yes, I did. Basically, I would say a generality of people, ordinary people, were very sympathetic to my message. For example, I give you one story. I was walking by the Black Sea, sort of Georgia, and I met two Russian women. At that time, Georgia was part of the Soviet Union. And these two women were working in a tea factory. And I gave them my leaflet, which was explaining the purpose of my walking and the manner of my walking. And when they read the leaflet, they stopped me and said, "Have you really walked from India? Please tell us more. Come into our tea factory and talk to other people. We are very interested in peace and nonviolence." So I went in and they gave me a cup of tea. And suddenly one of the women had a brainwave. She went out of the room and came back with four packets of tea. And she said, "These packets of tea are not for you." So I said, "For whom are they?" She said, "I would like you to be my messenger and take these packets of tea and deliver one to our premier in Moscow, the second one to the president of France in Paris, the third one to the prime minister of England in London, and the fourth packet for the president of the United States of America in Washington, D.C. I was amazed with her imagination and her idea. And she said, "Please deliver these packet of peace tea with a message from me." So I said, "What is your message?" She said that my message to these leaders of the world is that if you ever get a mad thought of pressing the nuclear button, please stop for a moment and have a fresh cup of peace tea from these packets. And this will give you time to reflect, to think, and to contemplate that the ordinary men, women, children, animals, plants, rivers, lakes, oceans, they have done nothing to deserve your nuclear weapons. So please think again and do not press the button. Now that is an example of people's feelings. And I met one after another, hundreds and hundreds of people who were genuinely fed up with all the leaders who devote so much money, so many resources, so much effort, so much intelligence, so much talent, so much creativity into producing weapons of murder, killing, destruction, and pollution, and ecological disaster. So people are very, very ready. I think our leaders need to rethink and practice nonviolence.
In the era of terrorism, you don't even know who it is who's attacking you much of the time, or you make up perhaps who it is. How do you use nonviolence to deal with the world we live in now?
First of all, in order to practice nonviolence, you have to see, are we causing terrorism? Who is the cause of terrorism? If we are doing something which is making people angry, if you take the Saudi Arabian terrorists, who were the perpetrators of dreadful violence on 9/11, on the Twin Towers, that dreadful act of terrorism. But they were saying that why we have these foreign military bases in our holy land. Now that we have to accept that we are not nonviolent. We can just say the terrorists are violent, but we, those who are civilized people, we have even stronger weapons of violence than the terrorists have. So we as much believe in the weapons of violence as the terrorists believe. So I would say we have to look into the causes of terrorism before we can defeat terrorism. And then if you take the story of the Buddha, where Buddha meets a murderer who is killing people left, right, and center because he wants to get hold of the state and he wants to take control of the state. And Buddha goes and meets this terrorist. And the terrorist said, "Why are you coming in my domain? Are you aware that I can kill you without blinking an eye?" The Buddha says, "Yes, I know you can kill me without blinking an eye. But do you know who I am? I am the Buddha who can be killed and die without blinking an eye." Now that kind of fearlessness really changed Angulimala, the murderer, the terrorist at the time of the Buddha. And he surrendered his weapons and he became nonviolent. So I think if you want to defeat terrorism, it cannot be defeated by fear or by stronger weapons. It has to be defeated by compassion, by kindness, by generosity, and by negotiation, by dialogue, by understanding why these people are so angry that they are prepared to kill themselves to make a point. Because there must be some point that they are trying to make. It's a political problem. It's not just a kind of terrorism of madness.
This is a discussion that goes on and on and on in this country and in the countries through which you've traveled, but it is not a simple one for people to accept. They want an evening out, a balancing, they'll say, and they also want to make threats so that potential murderers will not commit the acts. How do you place nonviolence against that?
Nonviolence is a superior weapon than the weapons of violence. If you kill one murderer, you create 10 murderers in his place or in her place. That is what we have seen. Look at Iraq. In spite of all the might of the United States and Great Britain, we are unable to defeat terrorism after 4 years and after killing hundreds of thousands of people and thousands of American soldiers and hundreds of British soldiers and people. And in spite of all that, we have not reached any state of defeating terrorism. That means that violence is an obsolete tool, a kind of out-of-date tool to defeat any kind of terrorism or any kind of violence or any kind of injustice. We have to return to training of nonviolence. I think the United States and Great Britain and India and China and Russia and all the other countries should create a Department of Peace rather than Department of War, Ministry of Peace rather than Ministry of Defense. And when you create Ministry of Peace and Nonviolence, you spend more money creating and training and educating peace soldiers so that they can go in a conflict situation and resolve conflicts through dialogue, through negotiation, through diplomacy, through understanding the root causes of violence and terrorism. So if we can spend 5% of our defense budget creating ministries of peace and departments of peace and training people to learn about techniques of nonviolence and techniques of peace, I think we'll be more successful than this endless billions and billions of dollars and pounds and euros and yens that we spend on armaments and military, which are wasted. Just imagine since the Second World War, how many billions and billions of dollars and pounds and euros have been spent on military and armaments. And what is the result? We have more hunger, more poverty, more pollution, more wastage, and nowhere near anywhere peace in the world.
Satish Kumar is a peace activist and the author of The Buddha and the Terrorist. We found him at his home in Devon, England.